Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Friday's UFC on Fox 23 event, which takes place in Denver, Colorado. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we went 1-0 on our premium bets for Bellator 170 to win 2 units overall. Our play was on Emmanuel Sanchez at even money over Georgie Karakanyan. Back to the present, UFC on Fox 23 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and Big Network Fox this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a lightweight contest between Jason Gonzalez, who is 10-3, and JC Cottrell, who is 17-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Cottrell minus 165, the comeback on Gonzalez at plus 125. Looking over our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu, it's currently Cottrell minus 145, Gonzalez at plus 125. So, dog stayed the same. Line margin just kind of tightened up a little bit, and there is two action on this fight. Split opinions out there, of course, and it is one of those fights, honestly. It's a pick 'em with a very slight lean towards Cottrell. Cottrell obviously making his UFC debut against Prezeris on short notice. He actually, even though he lost that fight, and he lost it pretty clear, I mean, Prezeris was definitely the better fighter in that situation. Not a bad spot for Cottrell because, I mean, I think he gained a little bit of respect from the bettors out there, from the MMA community, for stepping in on short notice. And, of course, Prezeris, honestly, recently has been one of the better fighters, of course, in lightweight division. So not a horrible loss in your UFC debut. Prezeris is a little tank. So this matchup for Cottrell is a little bit different, obviously. But Cottrell, getting started with him, he is a wrestler with experience, definitely. I mean, even before his UFC experience, he has a solid resume outside of the UFC. He has a well-rounded skill set, decent boxing, footwork, movement. His wrestling game is obviously solid as well. His takedowns are okay. He's got a sub game to go along with it. And he also has decent takedown defense. And again, if you look at his fight against Prezeris, you might question that a little bit, but he still had his moments in that fight by stuffing some takedowns and staying upright as well. And Gonzalez is not going to be looking to do that, obviously, as often here. Gonzalez, on the other hand, is a long-rangey fighter. He's got a lot of experience pre-UFC as well. Obviously, an Ultimate Fighter competitor. He does have a really nice win streak, obviously, before he got into the UFC and before the Ultimate Fighter. He put together a nice little streak there. And the guy's a dangerous fighter. I mean, he's a finisher. He's capable of finishing the fight standing or on the ground as well. And again, as I mentioned before, he's long, rangy. So he's a dangerous fighter overall. He could finish you standing or on the ground. And I really think offensively, standing, I mean, he's just so tough to deal with because he has got power and a little bit of an unorthodox style to go along with his reach over most people. And he has power to put you out. So he's very dangerous, I think, offensively. But the problem is, defensively, obviously, in his fight with Dober, he got rocked. He has that kind of tall man defense syndrome going for him right now. He needs to tighten up that defense because that chin got cracked and he's been knocked out a couple times in his career right now. So if Gonzalez is able to keep those hands up, Cottrell doesn't have the power exactly that Dober does, but he does have a little bit of power and he could replicate the same thing if Gonzalez isn't careful here. So this fight is going to really go back and forth. I think Cottrell has a slight edge in wrestling. Gonzalez has better takedown defense than most people probably realize, but he has been put on his back and controlled here. So I've been going kind of back and forth. I mean, does Gonzalez get the finish before Cottrell kind of controls most of the fight and gets a win on the scorecards or possibly knocks him out? I don't know. It's tough. I guess I have to lean a little bit more towards Cottrell right now, but again, bouncing back and forth. So make sure you check out the stat picks to get my final pick on this fight after weigh-ins. But for right now, I got to lean with Cottrell because I think he is going to be a little bit more steady. I trust his chin just a little bit more, although he has been knocked out officially a couple times, I guess, throughout his career as well. But his defense is, I think, a little bit better than Gonzalez right now. And I think he could control the action a little bit more. So not a confident pick, and Gonzalez could starch Cottrell, but I think that Cottrell is going to be my slight lean right now.
And I'm going to disagree very, very slightly. I also agree, though, that this fight is close, but I'm leaning a little bit more towards Gonzalez. I know Gonzalez did not look good in his UFC debut. He got hit with a low blow, and then the second they restarted, Drew Dober blitzed him and landed a bunch of clean shots and put him out. So that was not the best type of debut he was hoping for. Cottrell, on the other hand, I thought he looked okay. Even though he probably lost all three rounds to Prezeris, he was always in the fight. Every time Prezeris took him down, he was working to get back to his feet. He was active on the ground. It was clear that he knew what he was doing on the ground. It's just Prezeris was the better wrestler and had the top position and was threatening a lot more. So Cottrell really wasn't able to get anything going on the ground. It was just more fighting to get back to his feet. But on the feet, Cottrell's not bad. He has a semblance of a striking skill. It's just, I don't think his stand-up is even close to as good as Gonzalez's. Gonzalez has some good power. He's long. He fights long. It's just, I'm a little worried about Gonzalez's defense and chin. Although Cottrell isn't exactly the type of guy that's going to be lighting people up on the feet. So that's not nearly as much of a concern as it was in Gonzalez's last fight. For me, this fight comes down to whether or not Cottrell can get takedowns and stay in top position, and whether or not Gonzalez can keep it on the feet and try to either knock Cottrell out or just outstrike him over the course of three rounds. And I'm slightly, very slightly leaning towards Gonzalez here. I think people are maybe underestimating him after a not a very good UFC debut, and I think he's better than what he showed, so I'm going to lean with Gonzalez. Now, dropping down to the flyweight division, we have two UFC newcomers as a pair of tough 24 vets step into the cage. Alejandro Pantoja, who is 16-2, takes on Eric Shelton, who is 10-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
I open Pantoja -140, the comeback on Shelton, even money. Right now, over five dimes, the line did flip. It's Shelton -120. Pantoja is now even money. So they are getting two-way action in this fight. It's been kind of going back and forth a little bit. But right now, Shelton has basically steadied out as a slight favorite. So basically a pick-em fight with a slight lean towards Shelton. And I wasn't sure, I mean, when setting the odds, which way people would go. Because obviously the hype is more on Pantoja. Shelton's kind of an unknown. Unless you watch the Ultimate Fighter season, obviously you're going to respect Shelton. So all the bettors that came in early on Shelton did their homework, and that's why they came in that way, because he is a very talented fighter, kind of flying under the radar, honestly, in most cases. But again, some of the people that came in and got gobbled up some of that even money, I think they probably made a good decision, because right now it's the other way. But still, close fight. Pantoja is a beast as well. In fact, he was the number one seed going into the Ultimate Fighter House. So I'm talking about this past season, Tough 24, the tournament, which they had for all the flyweights to see who faces Demetrius Johnson, where Tim Elliott ended up coming the victor. Pantoja was the number one seed in that tournament, and he had a couple of tough fights. I mean, he ended up obviously doing well, made it to the semis, and then lost a very close competitive decision in the semis. But that being said, Pantoja is just a beast, former RFA flyweight champion. The guy has an amazing ground game, as far as he could sub you from on his back. He could sub you obviously from top. He just has many ways to get the fight to the ground and then work his submission game. Now, that being said, his wrestling isn't the greatest though at times. And if you have good takedown defense, you can basically sprawl and brawl and have a little bit of success against him. Pantoja on the feet's not bad though either. He does have a lot of power. He's not the most technical guy at times though. He does leave some openings and he's hittable. But he does throw with the intent to put everybody out. I mean, he's one of those aggressive fighters that throws pretty much everything he has in almost every one of his strikes. So he's dangerous on the feet. He's extra dangerous on the ground. It's just going to come down to whether Pantoja honestly could submit Shelton if he does get a takedown or he does have him on the ground. Because if not, I think on the feet, Shelton probably has better boxing of the two. I think his defense is a little bit better as well. He's got the speed advantage slightly over Pantoja. Wrestling-wise, I think it's going to be pretty close and competitive as well. I mean, Shelton against Tim Elliott on the show, I guess I should talk about that a little bit. He's also a semifinalist, and he did lose to Tim Elliott, obviously the eventual winner. And it was a very close majority decision type of battle, and it was true. I mean, Shelton did have his moments. It wasn't like the judges kind of butchered it. I mean, it was that close of a fight. I mean, he looked really good against a tough competitor like Elliott. And he came into the season as a 15 seed. So he wasn't getting that much respect at all in the season, but the kid is definitely talented. He's fast, strong. He's got good timing with his striking. He's got good wrestling, good scrambling to go along with it. So he's basically the total package. He's only 25 years old and he's continuing to develop his game and get better and better. So this is going to be a fight that's going to take place back and forth on the ground, standing up, everywhere the fight takes place, it's going to be competitive, and it's going to be a fun fight to watch. This is probably definitely one of the front runners for fight of the night, in my opinion, at least, because it's guaranteed fireworks. So with all that being said, I'm going to actually lean a little bit more towards Shelton. I just trust him a little bit better as far as I think his boxing is just a tad bit cleaner. I think he's going to be landing the cleaner strikes on the feet, and I think his takedown and sprawl ability is going to be enough to keep Pantoja off of him.
I definitely think this is a pretty even matchup. Pantoja was that number one pick on the show, RFA champ, really talented fighter, especially with his ground game. And Shelton was kind of the feel-good story of the show. I mean, he was the 15 seed out of 16 fighters, and he upset the number two seed in his first fight, then wins another one. I mean, he looked really solid. He is a really excellent athlete, has some rock-solid striking, and his ground game isn't half bad either. So Shelton is a bit of the complete package, but my one concern is I do think that he is a little bit susceptible to being taken down. He did bounce back up pretty quickly when he was taken down, but I think against somebody that really knows what they're doing on the canvas, like Pantoja, that could be an issue for Shelton. Shelton has been doing some training with Dwayne Ludwig and TJ Dillashaw and Jose Torres, so he is in the perfect place to have great cardio and have a lot of great training and coaching and preparation for this fight, with it being in Denver. But Pantoja is no slouch either. I mean, this guy trains at Nova Uniao alongside some of the best fighters on the planet in the lower weight classes, and then he moved over to the U.S. for the last few weeks of his training camp and was doing some work with Henry Cejudo, who has really taken it up a notch in his training and fighting. So I'm not going to sleep on Pantoja either. Pantoja, his skill set, while he has a pretty good stand-up game, I don't think it's as good as Shelton's. I think he's a little sloppy, a little wild at times. And his defense definitely is a work in progress. But where he really shines is on the ground. He is very dangerous, whether he's on top position or bottom. Pantoja is very aggressive with sweeps, submissions, you name it. If the fight goes to the ground, I think Pantoja is going to win it. So based on that and the fact that, well, Shelton should be better than Pantoja on the feet, I don't think it's going to be so much better that Pantoja is going to be desperate. So I think Pantoja can get this fight to the floor, and I think that he can either win a decision or get that submission. So I'm going to slightly lean Pantoja's way. Now moving on to the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have a light heavyweight contest between Marcos Rogério de Lima, who is 14-5, and Jeremy Kimball, who is also 14-5. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Always tough setting a De Lima line, but that being said, I opened this fight at De Lima minus 170, the comeback on Kimball at plus 130. Now, looking over fivedimes.eu currently, it is De Lima minus 175, the comeback on Kimball is plus 155. So basically staying the same a little bit. There is more action coming in slightly on De Lima. Man, I mean, it's just tough with De Lima because he is definitely a finishing type of fighter. He's dangerous. He's strong, obviously, for the weight class as well. And he's got that aggression and the power on the feet that he could put a lot of people out. I mean, he's got 10 knockouts for a reason. The guy is that dangerous. And his ability on the feet is kind of technical as well. He does get sloppy at times, but for the most part, I mean, he's definitely hitting you with decent technique and has power behind it. Also on the ground. If he's able to get the fight down to the ground, he doesn't have the best wrestling, but if he gets top position on the ground, he's got nasty ground to pound, and he's got the ability to finish you on the ground as well. So his offensive sub game is not bad. Now, defensively, that's a whole different story. And cardio with De Lima is a whole different story as well. So that's why it's difficult, because if De Lima doesn't finish the fight, usually in the first few minutes, you can't expect much from him. I think he gets beat after that. He does kind of have a little bit of quit in him, and fighters like that you can't really trust. Now, Kimball, on the other hand, I mean, he's been an okay guy outside of his UFC resume. He's fought in decent shows. He's got decent experience along the way as well. But he's, you know, been in fights that he's lost and got beat and not looking that great in. In fact, he's a Bellator vet. I believe he was around 500 or so. I don't have the record in front of me right now in Bellator. So it was one of those situations where, you know, it was like 1-1 or something like that, I believe. So he didn't look awful in Bellator, but still after that though, the fact is he started getting a little bit more steady because he switched camps and he went to train with, the MMA lab, which was a good move for him because since that time, since training with the lab, obviously Kimball's gotten a little bit more confidence. His striking, if you look at his fights, his striking's getting a little bit cleaner. He's not as hesitant on the feet either. I think his defense has gotten a little bit better. He's more confident as a fighter. I think his wrestling, everything across the board has improved. So Kimball's a pretty well-rounded fighter in his own right. He's just not going to blow you away. His stand-up's not going to be so dominant that you're in shock, you know, or he just dominates his opponents like that on the feet all the time or not, whatnot. But that being said, with this advantage going to De Lima overall, I mean, he's going to be the stronger fighter. He's going to be the more dangerous fighter. I still think if Kimball can kind of weather the spot early on, then he has a real shot of beating De Lima here. So it's a tough one. I mean, I'm going to pick De Lima because, again, he is – I guess a little bit more physical and he should be the more dangerous fighter of the two, but I wouldn't be surprised if Kimball again steps in here and along the way, maybe in round two or if it goes that far. I know I realize the total is 1.5 or so. So not really expecting it to go deep into round two, but if it does, as the fight goes on, I think Kimball has an opportunity to finish De Lima, whether it's on the ground or even, from strikes on top. So not a confident pick, but I guess I slightly lean a little bit more towards De Lima in this spot. But wouldn't be shocked again if there's another upset here.
My main issue is, even though Kimball did move over to a new gym and he has looked better in his more recent fights, this is a pretty big step up for him. I mean, UFC debut, 1 week's notice, and this is a guy that is a former middleweight who has only relatively recently moved up to light heavyweight, and he's taking on just a big, powerful guy in Marcos Rogério de Lima. And I know De Lima's not perfect. He is definitely not perfect. He makes a lot of mistakes. He's been getting himself caught in submissions a couple times now. So I am definitely concerned about that. But for the most part, De Lima has a lot of power on the feet. And when he's on the offensive in this submission game, I mean, he can do some serious damage. And Kimball, the last loss that he had against Chris Camozzi, I mean, that's a guy that is smaller than De Lima, a guy with a worse ground game than De Lima, and Camozzi was just all over Kimball and was able to get him to the ground and take his back and choke him out. And I definitely feel like if Camozzi can do it, then De Lima should be able to do it, even though I'm sure Kimball has gotten a lot better. And even though Kimball has showcased some nice power, most people, if they beat De Lima, it really isn't with their hands. So I'm not really concerned about that either. So for the most part, I just think that this is a relatively bad matchup for Kimball. And De Lima probably gets top position at some point and just either starts beating up on him on the ground or working for a submission. And I think he can get one of those two things. So I'm going to side with De Lima. Now dropping down to the middleweight division, we have Eric Spicely, who is 9-2, taking on Alessio De Chirico, who is 10-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in De Chirico, -155, the comeback on Spicely at +115. This one has seen a little bit of movement. Right now, it's Spicely -120. The comeback on De Chirico is even money. So early action does favor Spicely. A little bit surprised. I mean, obviously, that's why I opened De Chirico the other way. De Chirico is by far the better striker in this matchup. I think at least I thought he was going to get more respect from the overall betting community and the public in general, because he did lose his UFC debut in a competitive fight versus Velikovic, but he bounced back and got a decent win. I mean, somewhat surprising because a lot of people, I think, felt that he would blow McClellan out a little bit more than he did, but he still got the nod. Despite all that, and he definitely looked good at times in that fight as well. And I think McClellan just stepped up his game that day, and he was definitely competitive. But that being said, De Chirico, his background, he's got the striking advantage, as I said, in this fight. I mean, he's got some pretty clean striking ability. He's got some power behind it as well. His wrestling is actually not that bad, especially offensively. I think he's got the ability to take a lot of fighters down, control them on the ground. He can look for submissions as well. So he's a pretty complete fighter. Now, he does tend to make some mistakes along the way, and he gets put on his back. Even McClellan got him down a couple times in their matchup. And Spicely, that's exactly what he's going to look to do here. I mean, Spicely does set up at times the way he should. He obviously all the fights start on the feet. So he throws his hands at times to set up his takedowns, which he's pretty smooth and slick by doing so. I mean, if you look at his fight, his win over Thiago Silva recently, it was actually really slick. I mean, he set that takedown out, the trip kind of double leg takedown that he had with a punch. You know, he came in throwing heavy and then he shot right into the takedown and was able to get Silva down. So it's pretty impressive stuff there. And that's exactly what type of fight Spicely has to do here against Dicherico. I think he needs to get inside, get this fight down to the ground as fast as he can and try to implement his game plan. And once on the ground, Spicely has one of these grappling games that's just tough to deal with. I mean, he's so slick and smooth. And you just don't know where he's going to catch an arm or your back or whatnot. I mean, he's very dangerous. If you put him on his back, which is possible, I mean, Spicely probably has no issues of basically pulling guard either and playing on the ground. He's the type of fighter that looks immediately for submissions off his back or scrambles out, looks for your leg, finds a way up and out and onto your back. And that's trouble. So you don't want to play with on the ground at all with a guy like Spicely. You want to try to sprawl, brawl, keep the fight upright and try to knock him out. Or choke him. I mean, that one thing that I did see that Spicely does more often than just the Alvey fight is he does when he's diving in for a takedown sometimes, and he kind of shows it a little bit more too predictable at times, he does leave that neck out. So looking back, it's not a surprise at all that Alvey was able to catch that and submit Spicely in that spot. So Dicherico is more than capable of doing that as well. So Spicely also has to be careful when he's going for the takedown not to leave his neck in, because I could see kind of a repeat of that. But that being said, I mean, I think it's a little bit less likely that Dicherico does that. And I think the Spicely on the ground is definitely going to cause some serious fits for Dicherico. So this is another one that I'm going back and forth on, because you have a superior grappler in Spicely and a better overall mixed martial artist, I think, in Dicherico. So one mistake from Spicely, or I should say from Dicherico, could cause Spicely to win the fight. So Dicherico is going to have to be really smooth and careful on this in this fight here. I think he could probably do it, so I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. So I'm slightly leaning a little bit more towards Dicherico in this fight.
And I just don't see it. Maybe I'm biased, but I am not impressed with Dicherico whatsoever. UFC debut, he lost to a welterweight that was moving up just to make it into the UFC in Bohan Velikovic. And Velikovic isn't even that great. And then his next fight, he takes on Gareth McClellan, who is, in my opinion, one of the worst, probably bottom two or three middleweights on the UFC roster. He might even be gone from the UFC now. And he took him to a split decision and basically only won that fight because McClellan gassed in the third round. Like, there's not a lot about Dicherico's game that really impresses me. I mean, this is a guy that beat up a lot on local competition on the European circuit. But now that he's in the UFC, I mean, he's not even facing world beaters and he's not looking good. Eric Spicely, no, he's not amazing. He's not. But he showed some promise on his season of The Ultimate Fighter. And once he made it to the UFC, yeah, I mean, they threw him right in there. I mean, first fight, Sam Alvey, a guy that's a serious veteran now of the UFC and has had a lot of success, and Spicely didn't do so hot. But then they throw him in there against a top 15 guy in Thiago Santos, and he wins impressively. Just takes him down, gets on top of him, chokes him out. I mean, he dominated him. And that just shows how good Spicely's ground game is. And if he can basically force his opponent to fight his fight, then he can win. And he can win impressively. And I think Dicherico is a picture perfect type opponent for Spicely. First of all, I think Dicherico's conditioning is a little bit suspect, but second, Dicherico with his striking isn't exactly insanely dangerous to the point that Spicely, if he gets stuck in the stand-up exchanges, that it's going to be a huge problem for him. Dicherico's a guy that throws a lot of one-off shots. He doesn't really throw many combinations. He does throw some heavy strikes, but you can usually see him coming. So if Spicely is stuck in the stand-up, he's probably going to lose that portion, but I don't think he's going to get destroyed, and I don't think he's going to get hurt or anything. And then once this fight enters the clinch or goes to the ground, and I do think it will, then it's Spicely's world. I mean, a lot of Dicherico's game revolves around shooting in for takedowns. If he does that, he could be in a lot of trouble, even if he's on top position. So I really like Eric Spicely here. I think this is a really good matchup for him. I think even though he's had some tough fights so far in the UFC, this is by far his easiest fight out of his three. And I think that he has a really good chance to not just win, but win impressively, so I'm going to side with Eric Spicely. Now moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have Henrique da Silva, who is 12-1, taking on Jordan Johnson, who is 6-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Johnson, minus 165, the comeback on Da Silva at plus 125. Right now, it's Johnson minus 230 at five dimes. The comeback on Da Silva is plus 190. Looking across the down best screen, there is still some 2-1s out there. So it looks like market price is about minus 210 or so on average, or 215-ish. So still about 2-1. And I do agree with the early action coming in on Jordan Johnson. So again, it's people that I think did their homework that have come in early on and bet this fight. Da Silva had a little bit of buzz and popularity and hype around him coming into his last performance. And then that kind of got deflated a little bit because of the setback that he had against Craig. I mean, a lot of people were surprised, including myself. I mean, Craig is a decent fighter, obviously a very dangerous grappler, and we knew that going into it, but I thought Da Silva would fare a little bit better. He slows down in fights. He does makes silly mistakes at fights as well. Da Silva does. So he's the type of guy that on the feet, it can be dangerous. He obviously has a good clinch game. He's got knockout power. He's got the ability to finish fights. Obviously, against Christensen, he's able to finish a fight even off his back with a pretty slick armbar out of nowhere. So he does have some finishing ability, and he did have a little bit of hype, like I said. But again, he all got deflated, I think, with the Craig fight. And the sad thing is here, I think even though Johnson is not as slick or is not as unorthodox or as tricky as Craig is on the ground, Johnson is still, I think, the better overall grappler, meaning the wrestling, the control, the ground and pound. And then he also has a pretty decent submission game to go along with it. So that's exactly what Da Silva is going to face here. He's going to basically face the same type of fighter he faced in his last fight, but I think a little bit more of a complete fighter in Jordan Johnson and a little bit of more steady fighter. So again, people that came in early on Johnson and laid the chalk, I think you probably did the right thing here, because I expect this fight to kind of play out where Da Silva is dangerous at first. Eventually, Jordan Johnson is going to get the fight to the ground, and he's going to probably grind Da Silva out and look for a finish. I think that's exactly how it's going to go. Now, I should make a note real quick. I mean, Jordan Johnson was the former RFA light heavyweight champion before obviously it merged with Legacy to LFA. He's a wrestler grinder, like I just mentioned, and he does train out of good camp again at the MMA lab. So a lot of good things about Johnson. He's only 26 years old, I believe. So some pretty good upside. Now he does have a long way to go. I think he could definitely get better and improve his striking ability, but overall, I think this is Johnson's fight to win. If he doesn't get caught in anything stupid or finished against Da Silva, then he's obviously going to turn the tables and probably control and win this fight. Probably before he even hits the scorecards, but if it does go, Johnson wins the decision. So I agree with Jordan Johnson. I think he is going to get the win here.
Jordan Johnson is definitely a really talented fighter. He's a guy that's been on the radar as one of the better light heavyweight prospects that wasn't in the UFC yet, and I'm really thankful that they've picked him up. Now, this isn't exactly a walk in the park light heavyweight fight. I mean, Henrique da Silva's 12-1. He's already got a couple wins inside the UFC, including an impressive win over Joachim Christensen in two bouts ago. Now, obviously, his last one did not go well. Da Silva got beat up on the feet by a guy that was not known for his stand-up ability, and then he got crushed on the ground and submitted. So, I mean, that was really surprising. I thought that he was going to perform way better than that. So that took me a little by surprise. And now he's facing someone in Jordan Johnson who is a spectacular athlete, comes from an excellent grappling background, a lot of really solid wrestling. He's done a lot of jiu-jitsu and grappling tournaments, and Jordan Johnson also does a lot of training with the MMA lab, so he's really working with some elite coaches. So I think as long as he doesn't get completely blown out on the feet, and he shouldn't, Johnson at least knows what he's doing on the feet enough to hang around, then I think Johnson can weather the early storm, and then Henrique da Silva, especially being in Denver, I think he's going to gas hard. And Jordan Johnson probably picks up a submission or TKO on the ground at some point. So I'm siding with Jordan Johnson here. I think he has a really nice UFC debut and has a lot of potential to have a nice UFC career. So we'll see on Saturday night, but my pick is definitely Jordan Johnson. Now moving on, in the welterweight division, we have another UFC newcomer in Bobby Nash, who is 8-1, taking on Li Jinglong, who is 11-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Jin Long, minus 140. The comeback on Nash, even money. Now, the line did skyrocket at first. Early action was all Jin Long's way. But as we get closer to fight day, some action coming back in on Nash right now. So, again, I opened at minus 140, even money. Currently at five dimes, it's minus 150 for Jin Lang. The comeback on Nash is plus 130. When I was first getting into this fight, I thought, again, I mean, especially after watching Nash's loss that he had a couple years ago to Dixon, I thought, oh my God, this guy is absolutely horrible. Why is he even making his UFC debut? I mean, he does have a wrestling background. He's one of these, you know, wrestlers that are making their UFC run or whatever, or making obviously his debut, but getting into MMA, he's got that wrestling background, that he had some success in the collegiate ranks a little bit. So he's a developing young prospect in his own right, but I was expecting better wrestling in the cage. I was expecting better striking. I was just expecting a better overall fighter than I saw with Nash early on. But as you look into his footage, you can really see the improvements fight by fight that he is making. I mean, his defense was horrible. It's to the point where, again, looking back at his loss against Dixon around that time, to the point where he didn't like getting hit. You could tell that he kind of shied away from the fight a little bit when people were throwing. And then, again, coming into his last fight when he had the W over Luis Gonzalez, which is actually a pretty solid veteran. And then the fights in between leading up to it, you see the progression in his game. I mean, he obviously nobody likes to get hit, but he didn't shy away from the fight as much as he did. His defense got a little bit tighter. His offensive striking got a little bit better. His boxing got better. He does have power, and he's always been one of these strong athletic type of guys. So I really saw some decent progression in his game, and I expect him at age 26 especially to keep on improving that. And he got the shot here in the UFC against Jin Long, which is a pretty tough test. I mean, Jin Long is not a bad fighter at all. He's got some pretty solid wins on his resume as well. But the thing that I think happens here is he matches up really well with Jin Long. Jin Long's going to have trouble, I think, taking Nash now. Now, again, Nash is one of these wrestlers that I have seen been put on his back before, controlled a little bit as well, but he does have the ability to scramble back out in bad spots. And if you're going to straight shoot on Nash, he does have a pretty good sprawl and brawl. So he can keep the fight upright if he wants in most cases, even though he's been put on his back. So it's a little bit sneaky and a little bit tough to tell how solid his wrestling actually cage wrestling is. And I think it's a little bit better than most people are indicating out there. But that being said, I think he sprawls and brawls well against Jin Ling. And I think he does have the power in this fight to make life tough. I mean, if you look back at Jing Lang's recent performances, he's been winning fights by knockout, and he definitely has that in his arsenal. But at the same time, even though hasn't been officially knocked out, I mean, against Nakamura, he did get rocked and he got dropped in that fight as well. Nash definitely has enough power where if he drops him, he's going to probably finish him. So even though Jing Lang's a warrior, he's a tough opponent, tough out, he's a durable fighter overall, I still think the Nash's power is going to present a lot of problems, especially if this fight stays on the feet and Jing Lang is outscoring him, because I do believe Jing Lang is the better overall complete fighter right now. He's a little bit further ahead. I mean, he has a solid ground game in his own right. He gets top position. He could do some good things. He's got decent wrestling, and he's got a better boxing game overall than Nash. So I do see that Jing Lang is the better fighter, but stylistically, I think they match up really well. What I picture this fight being is one of those kind of head scratcher split decisions that nobody knows who won the fight, because I think Nash's power and control is going to kind of overdo or overtake some of Jing Lang's just boxing technique. That, I mean, he mixes things up so well and he does have that power. I don't think he knocks Nash out though. And I think Nash does have a shot to knock Jing Lang out. So I do think this is going to be a very competitive war back and forth. And I think people are counting Jing Lang or giving a little bit too much faith or stock in Jing Lang and counting Nash out a little bit because of, you know, look, some of the footage out there that's flown around and he doesn't look that great. I think he's better than most people think, and I think this fight's going to kind of prove it. So I'm going to pick Nash. I know it's an unpopular opinion out there, but I do think his power, his athleticism matches up really well here. So I'm going to go with the underdog to get the W here.
Now, if this fight stays standing, then Nash has a chance. He's a guy with a bit of length, a bit of size, and he does have some power in his hands, and Jing Long has been rocked a little bit in the past. That being said, I think Li Jinglong has really taken it up a notch in regards to his offensive striking. He's been very aggressive. He's showcased some nice knockout power overall. I mean, his last three fights, he has either knocked out or badly hurt his opponent in all three. So I think he's got a lot going for him in that department. So even if it is a pure stand-up fight, I think Li Jinglong has a more than 50% chance to win it. And if this fight does go to the ground, Nash does know what he's doing on the ground. He has a pretty solid ground game. He has a couple submissions under his belt. But I think Jing Long has a very aggressive wrestling game, and he can get top control. And I can see him grinding this out as well. So overall, I just think my big concern with Nash, for the most part, is the fact that his striking defense is atrocious. I mean, he can really eat some shots. And against somebody that has such solid developing power like Li Jinglong, I think Nash could get himself in some serious trouble if he's not careful. And just judging from watching him fight, he doesn't seem like the type of guy that is cautious. So with that, and with the fact that he is taking this fight on about 3 weeks' notice, not nearly as short notice as somebody like Kimble, but I do think that that is going to potentially affect him, especially a fight in Denver. But I'm going to side with Li Jinglong. I think that he can win this fight. I think he can get a knockout. Now, dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Rafael Assuncao, who is 23-5, taking on Aljamain Sterling, who is 12-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened this fight exactly pick a minus 120 either way. Right now, it's Assuncao that's actually getting a little bit more of the love. He's minus 140. The comeback on Sterling is at plus 120. I wasn't really sure which way the general action would come in at first. I mean, Sterling, obviously, the more hype, the more popular fighter overall. Assuncao has been, I mean, top of the food chain when it comes to bantamweights for a while now. I mean, in fact, he came back and he really was fighting again against the champion, because you could argue that Dillashaw defeated Cruz or whatnot. I mean, obviously he wasn't fighting the official champion, but I'm talking about that level of competition. I mean, he faced Dillashaw once before and he came back and he had to fight him after his injuries, after that long layoff. And he basically fought the best guy in the division when he came back, and he lost that fight, but you know, he had his moments and he was competitive, at least for being off all that time. So you can see what Sterling is facing here. And I understand why people are coming in on Assuncao a little bit more right now in this fight as well, because Assuncao is just a very well put together fighter. I mean, he's got ability in every area. He could beat you on the feet. He's got speed. He's got power. He's got technique to go along with it. He's got decent wrestling. He's got a good ground game to go along with it as well. So there's a lot of good things to like about Assuncao. And again, his experience level, he's been fighting the best of the best for a long time now. So he should have a slight edge in this fight. But again, the Sterling hype is hard to gauge. And with a talented guy like Sterling, which is only 27 years old, he's getting better. Even though he had that setback against Caraway, you just don't know how to gauge Sterling at this point. But that loss to Caraway definitely dropped his stock a little bit. That's why he's not favored in this fight. He got exposed. And one of the bad spots about Sterling in that fight was obviously his cardio. Now, again, I know he's saying he's more focused coming into this camp. One of our own guys, Gabe Killian, he's becoming quite an insider in his own right. He informed us earlier that Sterling's been in Denver for at least three weeks or so training at high altitude to get used to, you know, I guess the atmosphere, which is not a bad thing necessarily at all. That should definitely help Sterling. So I think his cardio will be a little bit better this fight. But that being said, I think a lot got placed into this line and the bets early on because of that. I mean, Sterling has all the talent in the world, especially on the ground. I mean, that's where he excels at. His wrestling, his ground game is definitely top notch. On the feet, he's not bad. He's got some power to go along with it as well, and he's improving. And of course, training with Sarah Longo, those guys, I mean, he's got a good camp behind him. So sky's the limit for a guy like Sterling, but he showed some flaws in his last fight. And now you're stepping in there fighting a very well put together fighter like Assuncao that doesn't have many flaws, that doesn't have some of those same cardio issues. So if you cannot get rid of Assuncao in round one, you know he's going to probably be there in round two, round three, and he's going to be in your face. He's going to be outscoring you. So it's a tough fight. And I think, again, that's why people are betting Assuncao here. It's a difficult one for me. I'm going to have to lean Assuncao a little bit until Sterling shows us what he's made of. Actually, in this fight, this is going to be a big test for me, in my opinion, for Sterling. Because if he passes his test, then he's right back in the mix. I think all the hype is justified around him. And I think that he can definitely compete for the title one day. And you never know. You can't count the guy out. I mean, with his improvements and by fight, he is going to get better and better. So I think Sterling will be on his way, but this is a big indicator here. So I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Assuncao because I think he's ready right now, and he's just a little bit ahead of Sterling. So hopefully I'm wrong, and because I do like what I see from Sterling, and I think he can definitely make some improvements and maybe eventually wear that strap. So I'll be pulling for Sterling, but at the same time, I think Assuncao is just further ahead right now, and so it's hard to pick against him. So I am going to pick him to win this fight.
I think this fight's pretty straightforward. It's all going to come down to Aljamain Sterling's conditioning. Obviously, he worked really hard in his last fight against Caraway was looking great in the first round, was in control, and then his conditioning failed him, and he wound up on his back for the final two rounds. And seriously, he looked really bad in those last two rounds. And that is a major concern, because not only was that his last fight, that was also, now he's taking a step up in competition against a Sun Tzu, who is the number four bantamweight in the world. So he's not even getting kind of a tune-up fight to get back on track. I mean, he's getting right back into the fire. So that's scary. I mean, Rafael Sun Tzu is no joke. I mean, this guy has a lot of quality wins over some excellent competition throughout his career. And he was on a, I believe, 7-fight win streak in the UFC bantamweight division before that recent loss to TJ Dillashaw. And even that fight wasn't a blowout. It was a relatively competitive fight. I mean, Dillashaw basically just got a takedown on him and outstruck him a little bit. So Sun Tzu is a competent striker, has an excellent ground game. Sterling should definitely have the edge in wrestling, but other than that, that's about it. I think Sun Tzu should be able to hold his own in terms of submissions. I don't see Sterling completely dominating this guy on the ground. So I think this is going to be a very difficult fight for Aljamain Sterling. Basically, he's going to need to get takedowns in all three rounds in elevation in Colorado when he wasn't able to do that for two rounds against Caraway. Now, I'm sure that he is addressing that problem and he's been really working on his cardio, but man, that is a huge, huge concern. So overall, I can see a Sun Tzu being in control of this fight on the feet. And if Sterling starts to falter a little bit and isn't able to get those takedowns, then I can see a Sun Tzu, just winning a decision. I mean, he's not exactly a guy that gets a lot of stoppages. So Sterling is going to probably have to work really hard in this fight if he wants to get a finish. And Sterling isn't exactly known for having a ton of punching power either. He's more of a grappler submission guy. So I just think it's going to be really difficult for Sterling to get a finish, which he's probably going to need to get the win. So I'm going to side with Rafael Sun Tzu. I think the conditioning is going to be a huge impact on this fight. And with it being in Colorado, even with Sterling being there for the last 3 weeks, I think once those cage doors close, it could be a different story. So I'm going to side with Rafael Sun Tzu as my pick. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have a middleweight fight between Nate Marquardt, who is 38-16-2, and Sam Alvey, who is 29-8 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
Up in Alvey -185, the comeback on Marquardt. At +145. Currently looking over at Five Dimes, it is Alvey -155. Marquardt is at +135. So a little bit more action coming to Marquardt's way. He's getting some respect back. I mean, let's face it, the guy has definitely put together a couple good fights. I mean, in between there, not so good. I mean, what to be expected with his knockout loss to Thiago Silva, but still, he bounced back nicely, got a win over McCrory, and before that, he knocked out Dalloway. So for him, I think it's a confidence booster. I mean, the guy's been around the sport for so long. In my opinion, Marquardt should be retired. I don't think he needs to be fighting anymore. I mean, again, I have no idea what his personal situation is, so I'm just looking at it from an outsider's perspective, but I'm saying he's put in the time, the years. He has all of our respect. I mean, he's been a warrior. He's been just in the game for so long that, I mean, how could you not respect the guy? He's ultra talented. He's a good striker. He's definitely a good grappler. He's a good wrestler. Just all around experienced vet that's capable of obviously finishing fights, winning a lot of decisions over quality competition as well. But it's just father time catches up to all these guys. And with Marquardt's history and the wars that he's been in throughout his career, he is not the same fighter. Now, again, confidently, he's been winning some fights. He's beaten some guys with a little bit of a suspect chin recently. So he still has a little bit of power in that back pocket that if he lands, he could definitely hurt you and put you out. Alvey has to be careful there. But with all that being said, I still favor Alvey in this fight because I think Alvey can sprawl and brawl, keep this fight upright. And I think Alvey can land that punch that knocks Marquardt out. So it's really who's going to land first here. I do trust Alvey's chin a little bit more, obviously, than I trust Marquardt. So I do think it's going to be Alvey doing the damage and probably putting Marquardt out. And I think that's probably the way it wins. I don't see this fight hitting the scorecards. If it does, it's pretty close because I think Marquardt might try to slow the pace of the fight down, push Alvey against the cage. And at times, Alvey doesn't push the pace enough. I mean, that's one flaw on his resume as well. Sometimes he waits to put his foot on the gas and by then it's too late. So if that's the case, if it hits the scorecards, and it's a boring type of decision. I can see that. But overall, I think it probably ends inside, and I think Alvey is the better striker in this spot right now, and I think he probably lands and takes Marquardt out. So my pick is going to be Alvey to win and probably by knockout.
And I'm in the same boat. Marquardt has picked up a couple wins, which is impressive. I honestly thought he was done, kind of like Nick said, after the Gastelum fight, where he just said he had nothing left in between rounds and they stopped the fight. But he's gone out and he's won two of his last three, picking up knockouts in both of them. But one thing you do have to consider is the two guys he knocked out, CB Dalloway and Tamden McCrory, both have appeared to have pretty susceptible chins. And I don't think Sam Alvey is that type of guy. I mean, yeah, Alvey got finished by Derek Brunson, but when Derek Brunson just blitzes people, he can just put them out. A lot of guys with good chins have been put out by Brunson during his little stretch. So it's going to take a lot more than just one good blow from Marquardt to take out Sam Alvey. Alvey has a lot of power. He's tough. He's inconsistent, because sometimes he just sits back waiting for that perfect shot. But I think he learned a lot from that loss to Elias Theodora, where he was pressing forward but not doing nearly enough and ended up losing a pretty one-sided decision. This time around, I expect Alvey to just get in Marquardt's face and be aggressive and try to land that big shot, because if he does, then I don't see how Marquardt can possibly withstand it. Marquardt is still dangerous. He still has a lot of experience and a lot of technical skill, but I just think at this point in his career, this is a tough fight for him, and I think Alvey can knock him out. So I'm going to side with Alvey. Now moving on to the first fight on the Fox main card, we have a featherweight contest between Alex Caceres, who is 12-9 with one no contest, and Jason Knight, who is 18-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Another pick 'em type of fight. I opened this Caceres minus 120 and Knight minus 120. Right now, though, the early betting action did not agree with the pick 'em type of fight. Right now, it's Knight minus 155, the comeback, and Caceres at plus 135. So slightly leaning towards Knight, the early action. I'm not really that surprised either, because, man, Knight has definitely impressed. In fact, Brian and I picked him last time he fought against Hooker, and we actually bet him as well. So we know what Knight's all about. I mean, the guy is a very talented fighter. Glad to see him finally get his spot in the UFC. Now, obviously, coming off of a solid win as well, and he's well on his way. I mean, at 145 pounds, Knight has a skill set to give a lot of guys problems. So he's going to be picking up some serious wins here. But against Caceres, I mean, he's going to have his hands full. Caceres is underrated, and he's been for a long time. So this is a really quality matchup, I think, for both guys. I mean, both these guys are similar fighters. And again, I should say that Knight actually has back-to-back wins, because he beat Ehlers in a pretty hard-fought victory, and then he beat Hooker, of course. So he's 2-1, I believe, in the UFC, just to clarify that a little bit. So he's on a little bit of a roll here. Caceres, on the other hand, is coming off of a very competitive fight. I think a lot of people were surprised how he was able to actually hang in there with Yair Rodriguez. Of course, we all know what Rodriguez just did to BJ Penn and how the improvement that he made, and he keeps on making. I mean, the strides this guy's taken. And Caceres just hung in there with him. I mean, it was a competitive fight. Again, hard to say he won it, but still, he was right there, and he did a lot of good things. It was a hard test, a hard-fought battle for both guys. And I think what that did for Caceres, again, is put more rounds under his belt. It's always good to go five rounds and get that experience as well, especially against elite competition. That's exactly what Caceres did there. So all that being said, this is going to be a scrap. I mean, both these guys, again, are well-rounded. They match up well. Both these guys can bang on the feet. Caceres is going to be a little bit longer. He is a southpaw coming into this fight as well. On the ground, both extra capable of finishing fights there as well. Especially Knight. He's got more submissions, obviously, and he's got better submission defense overall. But Caceres, I know he's lost a bunch by submission, but he has improved his submission game overall. I think his ground game just keeps on improving. Again, another guy that comes out of the lab that seems to get better fight by fight. So I'm expecting an all-out war. Both these guys are going to get top position on the ground. Both of them have underrated wrestling. Both of them have decent takedown defense, but have ended up on their back before as well. So this fight is just going to be a war for all three rounds, I think, and I expect it to probably hit the scorecards. If anything, I guess any things that I'm concerned about, Caceres does have somewhat of a suspect chin. He's been rocked in fights before. He's obviously been knocked out as well. So that doesn't sit that great with me. I think Knight's aggression, even though he doesn't have a ton of power in his strikes, he's got that killer instinct. So I wouldn't be surprised if Knight catches Caceres along the way and puts him out. But That being said, I'm expecting more so a very competitive decision that might even actually go to Caceres. So another one of these head scratchers, a true pick'em fight, in my opinion. And I'm actually going to lean a little bit more towards the dog here. I'm going to pick Caceres to win this fight. I do like, again, what I see from Knight. I just think that he's going to run into a Caceres that has pretty much seen it all right now. I mean, he continues to improve in his own right, even though he's got more UFC experience than Knight. And I think he's not going to be overwhelmed with anything Knight has to throw at him. And I think Caceres is going to be a tougher fight than Knight, that to Knight than most people think, including Knight himself. So I'm expecting an ultra competitive decision, but I'll go against the public because I think this is more of a pick 'em type of fight. And right now they have Knight favorite. So I'll go against the grain and pick Caceres to win his fight.
And I like Caceres as well. Now, obviously, Jason Knight is a talented fighter. He's very good on the ground, very aggressive on the ground, but it's his stand-up which has actually improved the most recently. His stand-up, he has been very aggressive, high-volume striker, which kind of makes up for his lack of technical striking. That's how he was able to kind of overwhelm Dan Hooker a little bit on the feet. But I think against Alex Caceres, that could play to a disadvantage because Knight, with all the strikes he likes to throw, he can kind of leave himself vulnerable. And I think Caceres can do some work on the feet. Caceres fights pretty long. He has a good jab. I mean, this kid held his own against Yair Rodriguez, the same Yair Rodriguez that just looked like an absolute world beater in a main event just 2 weeks ago. And that fight went to split decision over five rounds. I mean, Alex Caceres is a very underrated fighter. And he also does have a very good ground game. It's just, I think Knight's is better. I think Knight has a little bit better offensive wrestling. And if it does go to the ground, I can see Knight winning those ground exchanges. But that being said, on the feet, even though Knight is aggressive, I think Caceres can really score some points here. I think he can check Knight's chin. I think he can do some really good damage. And just for the most part, Knight does look like he's the type of guy that is advancing his striking and wants to showcase the striking a lot in fights, and I think Caceres can punish him there. Also, Knight really slowed down in his last fight just because of how big his output was, and even though he was able to, you know, gut check and win, I think fighting in Denver is definitely going to be an impact for him especially. So when you have a kid that just went five rounds and had a close fight in Caceres compared to somebody that got pretty tired in a three-round fight, I think Caceres can pull this out. As long as he doesn't wind up on his back over the course of three rounds, then I think Alex Caceres can pull off this little mini upset. So my pick is going to be Alex Caceres as well. Now moving up all the way to the heavyweight division, we have former champion Andrei Arlovsky, who is 25-13 with one no contest, taking on Francis Ngannou, who is 9-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened Ngannou -280, the comeback on Arlovsky +200. Right now, looking at five dimes, this is definitely the biggest mover of the card, really. Ngannou is now -425, the comeback on Arlovsky is +340. Another tough one to set because obviously I have a ton of respect for Ngannou. And if you listen to our breakdowns every time he's fought, I mean, you could tell that. I mean, I knew he was a promising prospect from the rip, and the guy has really delivered overall. So impressive wins. I mean, look at the Kimura he got in his last fight. Nobody was expecting that. I mean, he's just showing us new stuff all the time. And he's a powerful, explosive athlete. Again, I guess people have criticized him. I mean, there is some flaws to his game. A lot of people think he might have a suspect chin because he's been wobbled in fights before. I don't think so. I think his recovery time is really good, and he puts the beating on most of his opponents, obviously, because he's been on a heck of a run here. And they've brought him along, I think, the right way. I mean, little by little, they're stepping up his competition, even though I should say that one of his toughest fights, I thought, was Curtis Blaydes. Curtis Blaydes is a beast in his own right, and he's going to be making some waves here in the heavyweight division soon as well. But that was a really impressive win for him. But that being said, I think the last couple of fights were almost a step down, but they're still bringing him along the right way, building confidence in Ngannou. Now they think he's ready for a guy like Arlovsky, which let's not forget, Arlovsky was just in the title fight mix. And of course, we all know what kind of resume Arlovsky has with the who's who in the heavyweight division on his list as well. So he's got that experience, and a big win over Ngannou, or Ngannou, a big win over Arlovsky would actually excel him right into the title mix. So he's right there. He's knocking on the door. And he definitely has the ability to finish most fighters, especially at aging Orlovsky. I mean, I think Orlovsky's 37 years old now. He's been knocked out maybe around 9 times in his career. So, yes, this fight is definitely set up for Ngannou to get in there and knock out a legend of the sport and get a really decent notch on his resume. But with all that being said, Orlovsky's always dangerous. Still, he's got the power. He's got the experience. He's not going to be intimidated. We all know that. And he's got a puncher's chance in this fight. So I wouldn't exactly count him out completely. But I do think the early action on Ngannou, I can understand it, and it's probably justified in some ways because I do expect him to come out here and probably knock Orlovsky out. So that being said, would I lay it though? If you guys that are out there betting 300-400 on this fight, I would be cautious a little bit because this is, again, one of the tougher tests that Ngannou has because of Orlovsky's experience and because of his knockout potential as well. So we'll see how he passes this test. I do think he's going to, though. So I still wouldn't lay it, though. I don't think getting crazy with minus 350, minus 400 is the right way to go. So I would pass and watch probably a pretty fun fight because this fight's ending one way or another. It's probably going to be Ngannou finishing Orlovsky. So that's my pick.
I think this fight's pretty straightforward. Andrei Arlovsky is a serious veteran, ton of respect for the guy, and he had a nice little run on his return to the UFC, but I think the clock struck midnight on his little Cinderella resurgence story. He's now lost 3 in a row. Now, granted, they were all 3 to very talented top 10, maybe even top 10, top 5 fighters, but 3 losses in a row, all finishes, and now he's facing a guy that, in my opinion, could be the champ in a year, depending on if he can keep winning. And Francis Ngannou just looks like the real deal right now. And this feels like a matchup that is going to more be used to put Ngannou on the map than anything. He does need that quality win over a big-time guy. And Andrei Arlovsky still has a big name. He's still popular with the fans. And he is still a good fighter, but that chin is not getting any better. You saw in his last fight against Barnett that he just got wore down in that fight, even though he started pretty strong, just couldn't stop the takedowns. And then Barnett was able to finish him on the canvas. So I can see Ngannou just cracking him on the feet. I can see Ngannou bullying him into the fence. I might even be able to see Ngannou getting something happening on the ground if he hurts him on the feet after what he showcased in his last fight with that submission out of nowhere. So Francis Ngannou seems like the future, and Arlovsky seems like the past to me, and I think this is a really good opportunity of just kind of a changing of the guard in the heavyweight division because Arlovsky is actually still ranked higher than Ngannou, but I don't think he will be after this fight because I like Ngannou to win by knockout. Now, moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have a welterweight contest between Donald Cowboy Cerrone, who is 32-7 with one no contest, and he's taking on Jorge Masvidal, who is 31-11. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Cerrone minus 180, the comeback on Masvidal at plus 140. Right now, looking over 5 dimes, it's minus 155 to Cerrone. Masvidal is plus 135 now. Not long ago, it was actually a little bit higher, I believe 165, 145. So two action has come in this fight because originally it dropped and early action came in on Masvidal. Then as we started getting closer to fight time, action back on Cerrone. So looks like the trend's going to continue. There's going to be two action in this fight. I mean, both quality welterweights that were lightweights actually not long ago. So they match up really well together. I mean, both these guys are warriors. We all know they're well-rounded. I mean, striking is obviously what both guys like to do, and they're very successful doing so. I mean, beasts on the feet, technical with power, with really decent fight IQ as well, just everything. There's not enough you can say about these guys. I mean, killer instinct and finishers, really. So this is a very evenly matched fight, I mean, across the board. Hard one to pick as well. I mean, Cerrone's been on an unreal run. I mean, look what he's accomplished recently. I keep on picking against the guy here and there too, and he's been coming out on top. I mean, I didn't obviously pick against him against Brown, and there's been a couple exceptions, but I was expecting Story to be a tougher matchup for Cerrone. And just along the way, I mean, I thought he'd have some pretty tough fights, especially at welterweight, and he's come through. I mean, he's looked fantastic doing so as well. So Cerrone's a beast right now. There is some concerns for me though. Masvidal's looked good in his own right. And Cerrone's coming off that war to Braun. I know he ended up winning. I mean, it was a thing of beauty, actually, the way he finished that fight. But it was a war. I mean, Braun was landing his, and Cerrone was taking a lot of punishment as well. And now, just not long after, he's getting back in with Masvidal actually calling him out and wanting this fight on the Denver card. Obviously, Cerrone has a big fan base in Denver, all that stuff that's surrounding it. Of course, he's not going to turn down a fight. He's up for any challenge, so I'm not surprised by it. But I don't think fighting a guy like Masvidal this soon after he just had a war is in his own benefit. I think it's a mistake. I think you should have kind of waited. If Masvidal called him out, I think you should have kind of waited maybe for another card or two down the road. Even though it's the Denver situation, I know he wants to fight on that card. I don't think it was a smart move. With that being said, Masvidal also coming off of a recent victory. He fought not long ago, but his fight with Ellenberger was basically not a fight. I mean, we saw how crazy that thing ended as well. So he went unscathed, a pretty fresh fighter coming into this fight against a guy that just went through a brutal war against a very difficult fighter. So I am leaning Masvidal. I mean, again, I think these guys match up well. It's going to be close on the feet, competitive on the feet. Both these guys can get top position on the ground. Both these guys can obviously submit one another as well. I do give the overall jiu-jitsu edge, obviously, Cerrone. He's so slick on the ground that it's just tough to deal with sometimes. But defensively, he has been subbed, as has Masvidal. So I don't expect the submission to end this fight here. I do expect possibly a knockout could happen either way with the way these guys fight, or a very, very close competitive decision with Masvidal actually coming away with the win. I think Masvidal's boxing is going to be a little bit better. I think he's going to have to adapt and get used to Cerrone's kicking game, because I think that's what's going to be in his best interest to stay upright and try to utilize a tremendous kicking game. I mean, he could beat you with low kicks, middle kicks, high kicks, obviously. Cerrone's just tough to deal with those kicks, and he mixes things up well. But I think Masvidal can adapt, and he can outpoint Cerrone on the feet and probably do a little bit more damage along the way as well. I think defensively speaking, Masvidal is a little bit more sound. So I do believe that Masvidal is going to probably win a very competitive decision, if not maybe get a finish along the way. So I think it's a mistake for Cerrone stepping in this quick after that war, and I think Masvidal is going to make him pay for it.
And I can definitely see this fight being extremely competitive. Jorge Masvidal, Tom Cerrone both strike at about the same rate. They both are extremely accurate with their strikes. One of the big differences, though, is Masvidal is much better defensively. Cerrone is much more offensive-minded, and he's willing to take a couple shots, as evidenced by Matt Brown really hurting him in his last fight. So, and he's been hurt multiple times throughout his career, and he just doesn't care. And he's already back fighting again, so which is pretty wild. I mean, you would think that at some point that would really start to catch up to him, but it just hasn't happened yet. Maybe this is the fight. Jorge Masvidal has really been on a nice run, even though he's only 2-2 in his last four. I mean, you go back, he has had some very competitive decisions that he's lost, and he has really been on a stretch where he has either had competitive decision losses or won every one of his fights. So, this is just a guy that, has an excellent, just understanding of striking with Masvidal. Great counter striking, and then he's finally starting to turn it around a little bit where he is being more aggressive, and it's helping him win these decisions in when before maybe he was losing these close split decisions that he shouldn't be losing. Now, Cerrone, very aggressive, and I think one of the biggest impact parts of this fight is the fact that Cerrone's kicking game is so dangerous. You see, he can tear into your legs. He can really chew up the body. And then obviously, if you go back and watch the Matt Brown fight, a couple other fights, Adriano Martin's fight, his head kicks can be nasty. So Masvidal is definitely going to have to be alert there, because Masvidal, for the most part, uses knees and punches. He's not a huge kicker, but and he definitely doesn't want to get into a kicking battle with Cerrone. If Masvidal can keep this fight more in the phone booth, then that'd be great, because he's a guy that can just stand in there and box with just about anybody. So it's all going to be about distance on this fight and where this fight takes place. And if Cerrone can keep his distance, I think he can do some really good damage. And I think Cerrone's boxing might be a little overrated, and Masvidal probably is the better boxer. And if it goes to the ground, Cerrone and Masvidal both have very good ground games. I'd say Cerrone's submissions are better, but Masvidal's wrestling's better. So Masvidal might end up on top. So there's a lot of dynamics in this fight. It's not just as easy as it potentially looks because Cerrone's so much more popular overall. Because Masvidal definitely is going to give him a fight. But that being said, if you go back to Masvidal's last, like, clean loss, it was a competitive decision to me. It was a competitive decision to Lorenz Larkin. And I think the kicks had a big factor in that. And I think with Donald Cerrone's kicking game, that could play a big part in this fight as well. So I'm going to side with Donald Cerrone, even though he is not as good defensively as Masvidal, just because of those kicks. But I do think this fight will be close. Now, this takes us to the main event of the evening. We have Valentina Shevchenko, who is 13-2, taking on Juliana Pena, who is 9-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I have Shevchenko minus 170, the comeback on Pena at plus 130. Right now, over 5dimes.eu, it's Shevchenko minus 130, Pena plus 110. So Pena definitely the betting public's darling right now. Coming into this fight. In fact, she was actually favored at one point as well. So we're starting to see some Shevchenko money coming back in right now, but it was all early on Pena. Tough fight again. I mean, I opened Shevchenko a nice little favorite because I do believe that she deserves to be a small little favorite here in this fight. Pena deserves to be in a title eliminatory fight as well. I mean, she looked great. Her win over Katzingano, what can you say? The heart she showed, everything, the skill. Just she dug deep and pulled off a heck of a win over a very tough opponent. And not just that, I mean, Jessica Eye, the win over Eye, which a lot of people I know are knocking Jessica Eye right now because she's been on a little skid in her own right, but that's a quality win as well. So Pena's put together some pretty decent wins as of late. Again, deserves to be where she's at, but I think she's facing the best fighter in the female bantamweight division of Shevchenko. I mean, Shevchenko, I understand Nunes has been on a roll recently as well, but I think in five-round title fights, Shevchenko is the woman to beat in this division. And the funny thing is she's a little bit small for the weight class as well. But her skill, I mean, her conditioning, everything about Shevchenko makes up for the lack of size. And, I mean, it shows as the fight goes on a lot of times as well. So this is going to be a barn burner. I think that Pena early on is going to definitely be a tough matchup for Shevchenko. I think that she might even get the fight to the ground and get top position a little bit. I don't think she's going to have a ton of success. She might control and do enough damage to win the first round, maybe two rounds. But I do believe as the fight progresses a little bit, Shevchenko is going to be able to sprawl brawl even better. She probably ends up getting top position on the ground because that's one area that a lot of people underestimate Shevchenko. Her wrestling and her takedown ability is really solid as well. So she has been put on her back. I know people are going to say that about Shevchenko, and Pena is going to look to do just that. But I think her takedown defense is a little bit better than most people think, and I think offensively she is as well. So even this fight, the biggest advantage Shevchenko has in this fight is obviously keeping it upright and outstriking Pena because she is by far the better striker. But even if this fight turns into be a grappling matchup as it goes, I think Shevchenko can still hang with Pena on the ground as well. And again, as it goes on, I think she gets top position more often than not as well. So a lot of things to like about Shevchenko in this fight, and that's why I'm going to go with her. So I don't necessarily agree with the early action. It's hard to not like Pena at a dog price, especially with how she's looked recently. But I do think that she's in for more than she can handle with Shevchenko. Shevchenko wins this fight and then gets her rematch with the champion Nunes. And if she can hang in early, I think she probably ends up being the next UFC bantamweight champion. That's how good Shevchenko is. And I think it starts by beating Pena here. So good fight. I'm looking forward to it, but I think Shevchenko gets the job done here and either finishes Pena along the way or outpoints her to probably a competitive but decisive type of decision before it ends and hits the scorecards for Shevchenko. So she is my official pick.
And there's a lot on the line with this fight. I mean, the winner is almost certainly facing Amanda Nunes for the women's bantamweight title, and both girls would deserve it. I mean, Pena has been on a nice little run since winning that season of The Ultimate Fighter, and the last win over Katzingano was very impressive. Even though she didn't really look for the finish, I mean, she was in complete control of that fight. That being said, Valentina Shevchenko, I mean, she has been on a roll. I mean, she has been incredibly impressive, has gone out there against some really nasty competition and has just walked away smelling like a rose. I mean, the most recent win over Holly Holm was amazing. I mean, I don't think a lot of people thought that she would get in there with Holm, the girl that just blasted Ronda Rousey, and just take the fight to her like that, and especially a someone that was a champion boxer, and that Shevchenko would be able to mix it up and outstrike her. So I was really, really impressed with Shevchenko's stand-up ability in that fight. And she showcased some excellent ground skill as well. So it's not like she's just a one-trick pony or is one-dimensional. She's definitely three-dimensional. Paney, on the other hand, is definitely more one-dimensional. She needs to get fights to the floor. She's physically strong. She has a solid top control game, and she is aggressive with submissions and has some nasty ground and pound if she gets some space. But if she doesn't get the fight to the floor, she's a bit of a fish out of the water. Pena is just a bit of a novice on the feet. I mean, she just really is not dangerous at all in that area, and I don't see her getting even close to dangerous enough for Shevchenko to be worried. I mean, if this fight is stuck standing for extended periods, Shevchenko should be scoring points at will. And another thing about Pena is, even though she's excellent when she's in control on top, she has a bit of a tendency at times to give up a takedown and be on her back. Even Jessica Ai, who is, in my opinion, not nearly as good on the ground as Pena, was able to score some takedowns and get top position and win a full round against her on the ground. So Shevchenko has no problems going for takedowns. I mean, she averages two takedowns a fight. So I can see her really going for takedowns as this fight wears on. I don't think that Pena's conditioning is as good as Shevchenko's. I mean, Shevchenko just went five rounds, no problem. And I think Pena does really start to slow down, especially if you make her work. And Shevchenko will be making her work. So the way I see this fight playing out, I think Pena is going to start strong. I can see her getting top position in the first round, maybe even the second round. But by the second round, I think Shevchenko will really be making her work to the point where she's not able to get easy takedowns. And then Shevchenko will start landing on the feet. I think Shevchenko can get takedowns. And I think Shevchenko will either win a decision, 3-2, maybe 4-1, or she can even pick up a late stoppage as this fight gets into those really championship rounds in high elevation. So I really like Shevchenko and her conditioning here. So that's going to be my pick. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC on Fox 23. Our premium bets for the event will be released this Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.